Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Elizabeth, and I'm going to talk with you a little bit today about organic matter in green roof substrates. Just in case I run out of time near the end, I want to make sure that I thank my advisory committee from the University of Maryland. Doctors John Leacock, Stephen Cullen, and Andrew Ristvey were all absolutely essential to the success of this project. So I'll talk a little bit about, give you a background on green roofs, and then I have two experiments to talk about, and then I'll talk to you about my conclusions overall from the experiment. So green roofs, in case any of you aren't familiar, it's a planted roof system. It performs all the normal roof functions of keeping us from getting wet and keeping everything, the cold, from getting inside, but it also supports the growth of plants. The exact organization of these structures can change depending on the system, but this is a pretty basic representation. And you can see here, today we're going to focus on talking about the substrate layer, which is what the plants are growing in there. Major benefits fall into two categories, ecosystem services and economic benefits. Mitigation of stormwater runoff is definitely touted as one of the major benefits of green roofs. Also, urban heat island reduction and habitat creation. And then in terms of economic benefits, you extend the life of the roofing membrane, sometimes by as much as three times as long, so you have savings in the long term there. Savings in building insulation costs, fee reductions, especially for stormwater runoff fees, which are going up over time, and subsidies and rebates for installing the roof. We're going to focus today on the organic component of the substrate, which contributes to structure and porosity, increases the water holding capacity, affects nutrient content availability in providing nutrients, increasing cation exchange capacity, and affecting the pH. So the question is, how much organic matter should you use, and especially pertinent to my talk, what type? The published recommendations are a little bit confusing. Are you looking at things by mass or by volume? FLL guidelines, which are sort of considered to be a green roof bible, tell you less than or equal to 65 grams per liter by mass. Auckland Regional Council gives you 5 to 20% by volume. And not all types of organic matter are created equal. So the difference in bulk densities between different types can create a lot of problems here, as well as in water content between different types. Two major types of organic matter, composted and raw. These are all ones currently used to some extent within the industry. And so for my project, my overall objective was to understand the role that these different types of organic matter would play in establishment of plants on a green roof. So one hypothesis, there will be an effect on establishment success, and that there will be an effect on volumetric water content and hence stormwater runoff efficiency, stormwater retention efficiency, I'm sorry. So the first experiment was conducted outside on the third floor roof of a building. So I hypothesized that volumetric water content will not be equal and that plant growth will not be equal for the four organic matter treatments. Substrate was a mix of M2, which is a green roof substrate produced by Stansel's. We did 80% of M2, and they made us a special batch with no organic matter. And the organic matter I added in 20% by volume, four different types, mushroom compost, coconut core, smart leaf, which is a neighborhood compost mix, and rice hulls. Of these, two are composted, the mushroom compost and smart leaf, and two are raw materials, the coconut core and the rice hulls. So they have not undergone the thermophilic composting process. There are 168 modules on the roof in total, 42 of each type of treatment. I used Fetimus camchaticus, formerly known as Sedum camchaticum, which is definitely a workhorse of the green roof industry. And half of the modules were planted, half unplanted, to look at the difference in water dynamics between the two. This is an overhead view of the module, three plants in each module. Used a randomized complete block design, blocking for a sunlight and temperature gradient across the roof. And so first I'm going to talk to you a little bit about water retention in that first experiment. We measured substrate moisture content by using Decagon Devices GS3 sensors. So they were measuring moisture content and electrical conductivity as well as temperature in the substrate and keeping track of it in a data logger on the roof. We also measured rain events. And I used a weather station set up at the research greenhouse on campus, which is just under 1 kilometer from the study site. And for each rain event, we did descriptive details such as duration, total precipitation, and intensity. So here are three rain events that occurred during the course of the study period. The first one is early in the study period, the second is in the middle, the third one is near the end. And you can see that at the beginning there are less distinct differences as the plants all started the same size, but really distinct differences start to pull out by the time you get to the second and third rain event. So if we focus in on the second rain event as sort of a nice example of what happened, you can see the four different types of organic material have noticeably different water holding capacities, with coconut core being distinctly higher above the others than mushroom compost, smart leaf, and rice hulls. So then just a quick comparison here to show you, so those, that last graph we saw was averaged across planted and unplanted treatments. This shows you planted and unplanted split out. So you can see a really nice visible difference in volumetric water content and moisture dynamics. The top graph shows you planted modules. The bottom shows you unplanted. So you can see that the accommodation and then runoff curves are both smoothed when you have plants involved. So it allows the roof to capture more water if there are plants, which seems a little intuitive, but it's still something that we're working on quantifying within the green roof industry. These are technically two separate events. You can see the first one and then the second one there, but they occurred very close together, which is why they're shown on the same graph. So then for that first experiment, we also documented plant growth. Harvested the second year of plant growth three times throughout the season. At each harvest, I took images and did a destructive harvest. The roots were washed. As Sarah mentioned, dealing with roots is horrible, but sometimes has to be done. So we got root and shoot fresh mass, leaf area extrapolated since there were too many leaves to quantify all of them individually, dried everything in a drying oven, and then got a dry mass. So our plant growth results, this is for the third harvest, the final one in September. You can see that there are significant differences in both leaf area and dry shoot mass, with smart leaf and mushroom compost being significantly larger than coconut core and rice hulls, which can be just a little bit counterintuitive when you consider that coconut core had such a high volumetric water capacity or water holding capacity. And those same growth differences can be seen visually looking at the modules. The two on the left are the raw materials, coconut core and rice hulls. The two on the right are the composted materials, smart leaf and mushroom compost. So, as I mentioned, having plants in the modules definitely plays an important role in water dynamics. And then, as far as the organic matter treatments go, coconut core showed a really high water retention, but was not particularly reflected in increased biomass. Mushroom compost and smart leaf had lower water retention, but had very high biomass. And then rice hulls had low water retention and low biomass. So that definitely indicated to us that growth differences cannot be solely explained by water holding capacity, which is something that we had sort of considered strongly going in. So the second experiment, the growth chamber experiment, helped us to narrow this down. Then, so we said percent volumetric water content, again, will not be equal. Plant growth will not be equal. And then we add in tissue nutrient content will not be equal, so that we could try and narrow down what was causing these growth differences. 72 pots in a growth chamber. Again, we used Phetomys camchaticus. Substrate development was the same as I already talked about for experiment one. Chamber settings were set to mimic spring in College Park, Maryland. So I took those off of weather station data from the past several years. And I watered with 50 milliliters of water every 5 days consistently across all of them. And there were blocks set up originally to block by initial plug size. So again, I used sensors from Decagon to measure the volumetric water content. And so here you can see just an example of one that had the highest volumetric water content and one that had the lowest. Coconut core has consistently had the highest volumetric water content. Rice hulls consistently had the lowest. These are three watering cycles surrounding the third harvest date. So this is once the plants have already started to show as many differences as they're going to within the study. And we know that from previous experiments that water use efficiency declines rapidly below 8%, which is right here. So you can see that regularly both the highest volumetric water content treatment and the lowest were dipping below that 8%, which provides great evidence to indicate Phetomys camchaticus as a cam cycler moving between C4 and CAM photosynthesis when it gets into water stress. So our volumetric water content results, this is a lot of numbers to look at, but if you want to focus just on Harvest 3, we were really expecting, again, to see more differences here, but by the final harvest, we were still not seeing the significant differences pulled apart the way we're expecting, again, indicating that there's something beyond water to be looking at here. So for quantifying plant growth in the second experiment, similar concept. I did three harvests. At each harvest, again, there were images taken and plants removed. Roots were washed, leaf area. The only additional thing here is that we conducted tissue analysis on selected samples. So if you look here at plant size across the three harvests, so look down each row to see the change in treatment, you can see that while they start relatively similar, you get smaller, you get yellowed and smaller growth, especially by the bottom image there for coconut core and rice hulls. So that's just with plant size. And you can see there are significant differences in both root and shoot growth at that final harvest, with mushroom compost and smart leaf again being largest. And then in terms of plant health, if you look here at the, again, going down the line, you can see significant yellowing and smaller cupped leaves on coconut core and rice hulls, especially by that third image, which is indicative of a potential potassium deficiency. So here we have the tissue nutrient content results. You can see, I don't have a key on here, but red and purple, red is mushroom compost, purple is smart leaf. And you can see again very clearly that they had much higher potassium content. So the two showing nutrient deficiency there are the lower, are the blue and the green in the shoots. So this confirmed, the second experiment really confirmed the growth trends from the first experiment. Again, we saw minimal significant differences in volumetric water content. And then the tissue nutrient analysis really helped to confirm potential potassium deficiency as a cause of stunted growth. So our major questions, do different types of organic matter affect the success of plant establishment? I think we can answer that with a resounding yes. Can we understand how these organic matters are affecting nutrient and water dynamics? I'm going to give that one a more tentative yes. We're starting to understand, but there's still a lot more work to be done here. So with experiment one, we learned that mushroom compost and smart leaf were more successful, but were unable to really understand why that was the case. With experiment two, we saw that nutrient content really drives success as long as there is adequate moisture present. And there's still a ton of work to be done on this topic. So future work suggested by these experiments includes mixing different types of organic matter, potentially to get the water holding capacity of coconut core with the nutrient benefits of smart leaf or mushroom compost. Documenting these volume and mass disparities, I think if you were able to see my mixes, which were done volumetrically and then, volumetrically and gravimetrically, there's just so many differences when you're holding a handful of very dry and lightweight rice hulls and then holding a handful of mushroom compost. You can just see very clearly how different those two are. So it's impossible. We really need more work on how to include these things in substrates. And then the goal of all of this is to help inform green roof standards so that as more and more green roofs are getting installed, we're doing them well and doing them better and making advances so that we're not, a green roof failure is very costly, having to replace the substrate, replace the materials. So the better we can do with them, the more this will increase positively over time. My personal future work, I'm at the Longwood Graduate Program right now, doing work on green roof outreach and education. And then just my acknowledgments here. So we've got about 45 seconds if anyone has any quick questions to ask me about green roofs and green roof substrates. Yes?
So could you repeat again what smart leaf is?
Yes, I'm sorry. It is.
Can you comment on the nutrient level of these
compost? Sure. So smart leaf is a neighborhood compost mix. So another one is leaf grow. It's something where all of the materials that you know, lawn clippings and leaves and branches from your yard are composted by a municipality. And then commenting, very briefly, higher nutrient content and availability in the composted organic matters. So that would be mushroom compost and smart leaf versus the uncomposted. The pHs were all within the ideal range for green roof substrates. So there was some variation there, but they all fell within a pretty normal range. And I would love to answer your question, but as the moderator, I definitely can't go over. So I will talk to you happily afterwards, and if we can move on to our next presenter. Thank you.